Welcome to Hollywood Unguided, the Gunther Central Perk, a political podcast. Well, it's been quite a week for me personally. We just recorded the podcast there, and neither Neil, who joined us for the first time this week, or Deborah, who you know, noticed that I've shaved my beard off. The reason I've done that is because my six-month-old baby, Matthew, is getting very grabby, and every time I pick him up, he immediately clamps both hands onto my beard and tries to swing from it. And that's about as painful as you can imagine. So expected a big reaction there. Didn't he get it? Matthew's not the only one causing the trouble. My second oldest daughter, Megan, she's off school at the moment. She was up vomiting through the night. Happened to be the night that her and her two sisters decided they all wanted to have a sleepover in the same bed. So not only did she vomit over a bed and the wall, she always also vomited over both her sisters, who I had to wake up to tell them they'd been vomiting on because they slept right through it. And we had some family up at the weekend and they had to pop in yesterday on their way home to collect something they'd forgot. And as we were leaving, they reversed through the garden wall. That's just a wee taste of the week I'm dealing with at the moment. But, you know, I feel better now after the podcast. I think it was quite good, quite positive. It was nice to have a fresh voice. Neil's the sort of founder of Ungagged. He set it up many years ago and has been involved in the different iterations of it. So we started off and I talk about the fact that COP26 is kicking off this Sunday, I believe it is. I was shared my sort of cynicism and general negativity, I feel, about the whole thing. You know, went up a notch in terms of talking about thing. I've got roadworks right outside my house as well. I hope he's kind of hear it. I think we get away with it during the podcast because the workmen were taking their lunch break, but they've just started their machines up again. So if you hear a rumbling in the background, that's what it is. So like I said, we spoke about the fact the Tories are dumping sewage into all the rivers in England and into the seas surrounding. Thank goodness that's not happening up here because we are shielded from that kind of thing by devolution. Fingers crossed that it stays that way. We also spoke about the fact that Open Democracy revealed the BP. I've been basically deploying a security team to spy on activists. And I don't mean like radical eco-terrorists or even disruptive sort of protesters along the lines of Insulate Britain. Or not. We're just talking about people involved in kind of run-of-the-mill campaigns like trying to get universities to divest from fossil fuels and things of that nature. And then we ended the pod by talking about the controversy, in inverted commas, that the tabloids and the Tories tried to stand up against Lorna Slater for saying that we should liberalise our drug policies and pointing out that drugs are not in themselves inherently dangerous. It's a lot of the culture of criminality and illegality that we have created around drugs that make them dangerous. So I think that's enough moaning from me, and I'll let you go on with listening to the actual podcast. Let's get on Gagged. Welcome everybody. We'll get a slightly different lineup today. Yono Deborah, the digital Michelangelo from Mulgai. But we also have a new, well, not so much a new person, but new to Hollywood Ungagged. We have the founder, the instigator, the original gangster of Ungagged. It's Mr. Neil Scott.
Hello.
So welcome, Neil. We've been trying to get you to come on for ages and we've finally managed it.
Yeah, look, I'm just going to sit here. You feed me with stuff. By the way, can I ask, is it all right to say shit and stuff like that?
Yes.
Yes.
That's all right. Okay. So feed me with shit and I will, respond with shit.
Well, we have a whole segment dedicated to shit this week. So.
Oh, super. Yeah. Deborah and I have been talking online about rats.
Yeah.
I saw that.
Yeah. Yeah, so anyway, we're going to get to that, I guess, as well, are we?
Yeah, well, the first segment is about the COP26, which is finally starting this Sunday. So this Sunday is the beginning of the COP26 summit, which has been, it feels like it's been on its way for a very long time. So it's the 26th conference of the parties to sign the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change back in 1994. It brings with it a host of disruptions from Glaswegians, putting pressure on accommodation and infrastructure, and it's coinciding with industrial action from council and transport workers. So how's everybody feeling about COP now that it's finally arriving, Deborah?
Well, I'm glad that we're having all these folk coming to discuss what is essentially the most pertinent issue in politics right now. I think all the global leaders come to Glasgow. It's a great thing for Scotland. And I think, come on, the workers using that opportunity to make their points, like we discussed last week. But some things that it's happening in the actual city, like shutting down cycle lanes, is a bit stupid and frustrating. And if I hear one more story about ratus, I literally heard on the radio this morning, a guy was phoned in, he was moaning. He said, "I've seen 15 rats up Porto." And I know it wasn't meant to be funny, but it was followed up with, "And a rat as big as a cat." And I swear to God, I'm fed up hearing about it. Rats are living creatures too.
Look, I've got something to say about that. It's not the rats that I'm bothered about. These people are flying in from all over the world to see our beautiful city. And what are they going to see? I was out this morning, and can I tell you, there are leaves everywhere. There's leaves everywhere. And not only that, in the parks, there are actual rodents that can climb trees. They're everywhere. And they're gathering stuff. They're, you know, you can see them, you know, nibbling stuff and eating stuff in the middle of parks. And like, you know, you have people coming from, I don't know where they're coming from, Saudi Arabia, maybe China and all that sort of thing. I bet you they don't have those climbing tree rodents eating stuff in the middle of a park with leaves everywhere. I mean, it's a mess. Glasgow is, it's an actual mess. Brown stuff, you know, falling off trees everywhere. It's terrible.
I mean, I'll be honest, I just cannot give a fuck about the whole COP26 thing. I just feel as if it's...
No, see, but I can tell. I can tell.
Why do you hate trees?
But it's just the whole thing. It's like, we know already what will happen. They'll have their big meetings, they'll set targets, they'll announce these targets at the end of the conference. All the environmental experts will come out and say, these targets are no good enough. They are not even close to good enough. And then in 18 months, they'll all fall behind and they'll be hitting them anyway. It really just feels like it's more like just another opportunity for big business to lobby like world leaders. And you look at
the world leader that should be here. The world leader that should be here isn't here. It isn't coming. So Zuckerberg, who leads the world, isn't coming. And the other guys who are, you know, at the moment trying to get into orbit, trying to build, you know, their castles in the sky, they're not coming. So, and they're the important people. They're the important people who should be here, because regardless of what comes out of this, whether it's positive, negative, or meh, they're going to paint it in a way that, you know, they want it to. In fact, do you know what? What should be invited here is the algorithm. The algorithm, the Facebook algorithm, the Twitter algorithm should be invited. They should be at the top table next week. You know, and in fact, the algorithm should be out there leading our movements at the moment. In fact, it probably is. In fact, I know it is. So, yeah, get the algorithm here. The algorithm should be sitting discussing this. That's my thought.
What's that for me? Al who?
Algorithm. Al Gore. See, do you know what? There's the conspiracy. There is the conspiracy. Everybody thought Al Gore was about the environment and all that sort of stuff. He wasn't. He was just, a concoction of data created by Zuckerberg. There's the first conspiracy.
When you look at Al Gore, he does have the charisma of data put together by committee. He doesn't really have a kind of humanity about him.
No.
Another conspiracy is just how much things are costing. You know, it's the COP26, but really is it Capitalism 26? Like, I was looking at some of the fringe events. I thought, oh, I might get involved in some of them. They look good. Go to a Zoom meeting. £25 a day for the New York Times fringe events. I I really only wanted to go to one session about trees. Like, it was very frustrating. And I just keep thinking, how are all these folk coming from all over the world, disenfranchised populations, like Indigenous tribes and, you know, representatives from First Nations people, how much money is being made on the backs of folk who essentially, that climate's going to impact the most? And yet, oi, us, who maybe we could participate, we could go and we could spend our money if we had some, but we are being excluded by all the restrictions that are being put around Glasgow. And I wasn't really wanting to go and protest because, you know, the whole corona thing's still a thing. But a lot of what's happening is making me think, I need to go and shout about this. Mm. Shout it, shout in the park.
There's only two events that, you know, that I personally want to go to. One is Greta. So Greta coming on the 5th is huge. Now, you know, the people who are listening to this will be really cynical about that and, you know, about this wee girl who did all the things that she did. But, you know, as a teacher, can I tell you that, honestly, what she has done to help get young people involved in this and get their voices heard has been amazing. And, you know, can I tell you as well, I put a wee, you know, you'll know that I last night put a wee stupid wee video just of her tweet on, you know, on my YouTube. And the reason for that, the reason why I did that was because I've taught, you know, hundreds of children over the past few years. And you know, together, you know, me and my classes learned about Greta, you know, as she kind of emerged. And honestly, she is a hero to them. So I put it on my YouTube because lots of my ex-pupils will, you know, they'll see that. And I know that they'll be excited about that and they'll want to go. And that gets, you know, that gets them involved and gets them into the language of all of this and the, you know, the arguments of all of this. The other event, by the way, that I want to go to is I can't remember what date it is, but there's a cycle, you know, there's a big bit where there's a big event where we're all cycling in or whatever. But as you were saying earlier on, I don't know how I'm going to get in because all my cycle paths are blocked. I'm not able to get in. Oh, I don't know. We'll see about that one. But yeah, definitely the Greta event is for me is massive. For Glasgow, I feel it's a massive thing.
I don't know. I just feel as if, and I think back to things like the GA, the Make Poverty History, that we're all, even the likes of us on the left, or we're all just part of this big pantomime that they have these big conferences where, you know, they make their money. This is getting sponsored by Unilever and GlaxoSmithKline. But then we have our counter-protests and we march, and then that never really does. It seems to make a difference. And it's like, I feel as if we're all just part of this big pantomime, that we're all part of the same thing, as we're all marching off the cliff towards climate disaster.
Look, the G8, we didn't have Bob Geldof. We did have Bob Geldof during the G8. And in fact, he was able to re-release Feed the World with whoever was famous at the time. I don't know where that money went to. But this, he's missing a trick. Bob Geldof hasn't got involved in this. And there's a Christmas number one, if I ever saw one, like Green the World. You know, and who could we have singing on Green the World? I mean, imagine Greta doing the Bono bit with the blah, blah, blah. I just think that there's a Christmas hit. Bono and Geldof, where are you? You're I don't know, they're sitting on their arse somewhere. It's a huge miss opportunity. Now, what you mean, like it could have been a huge thing in Wembley or Hamden or whatever, you know, and I don't know, who are pop stars of nowadays? Who are the pop stars nowadays?
TikTok stars.
TikTok
stars. That's what
star.
You need.
I'm nearly 40. I don't know who big stars are these days.
But we could, at Christmas, have named the number one. It would have been Bob Geldof and whatever with Green the World, if he had got his finger out, like, but obviously he doesn't give a shit. He doesn't care. Bob Geldof does not care.
He's made his money.
No, he doesn't. I think that we're moved beyond that, though. I think young folk aren't as easily led by trends necessarily, like following big pop, like maybe Billie Eilish, but she's pretty green anyway. She's got green hair.
Yeah. Do you know who Billie Eilish is? That's really amazing, actually. Like, I know someone.
My daughter likes that, actually.
I think young people, they'll decide how we do it. Like, to be honest, they're coming up. They're going to lead us out of this. And all we really need is for the politicians, people like us who can maybe influence local policies, at least. Maybe we need to just do what's right for the young people. Like, we don't need to expect them to do it, just as long as they're shouting loud enough about it, let's just listen.
Well, I mean, Co-op's got what, another couple of weeks to run, so I get the feeling we'll probably be talking about it again over the next couple of weeks. And
yeah,
hopefully I feel more optimistic and I don't just descend into a well of bitterness, which I think is certainly more likely, to be honest.
I mean, I do agree, David, that I think that, you know, what will come out of this will be a bit like the G8, in that there were, you know, these, you know, after it was hailed as this great success for, at the time, Gordon Brown and Tony Blair and all that sort of thing, that, you know, and, you know, they got the world leaders to agree on this thing, that thing, and the other thing, and not, you know, for ordinary people and for working class people, there was no change that I saw, and I think that's kind of what it's going to be like. There's going to be, you know, in a couple of weeks, when this is all over, it'll be hailed as a great success, and, you know, each government will say the amount of money that they're putting in, which will come short, as we know, and, you know, all of the things that they say they're going to do will come short, as we know. And it'll be interesting, actually, in 2050, say, or 2040, to come back to Glasgow, to the SECC, and watch as basking sharks swim by where that site used to be. Because, you know, one of the things that I, you know, my children know, because our school is right near the Clyde, is that if nothing changes, that part of the, you know, along the Clyde is going to be swamped. So it'll be tangible if they don't come to any meaningful agreement. It'll be tangible in 2040, 2050, when the SECC floats away.
When the hydro becomes an island.
Yeah.
What do you think could be the most tangible stuff to come out of? Like, we're being negative, so let's be a bit positive. What's the best thing that could happen? I think just the commitments to... when you commit to something, that doesn't necessarily mean it's going to happen. So should they all be overcommitting to the demands that the planet needs? What do you think? Like the 1.5 degrees Celsius rise, like, we've already missed all the targets, haven't we?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that, well, the most tangible thing that'll come out of it will be that, you know, perhaps Boris Johnson will reveal that he's using some sort of green Brill cream or hair gel or something. I think that, you know, and I might sound very cynical. I am cynical about this because I think the global politics at the moment now, we're kind of, you know, people talk about, you know, what it was like during the time when we had the West versus, you know, the Soviet bloc and all that sort of stuff. We're kind of back to that, but it's rather than having an alternative to capitalism, we've got a different kind of capitalism now, clashing with capitalism, you know what I mean? Capitalism, inherent in capitalism, is, you know, is this will to compete and want to compete and need to compete. So that, I mean, that's what capitalism is, you know, is built upon. So there'll be no competition, and it's the wrong kind of competition. So there'll be no kind of competition to, you know, to slow things down, which is what we need to do. We need to contract, and we need to, you know, there needs to be a convergence. So there needs to be a contraction of our overproduction and overproduction of shite that we don't need. There needs to be that sort of contraction. There needs to be a contraction of energy use in the West. And then there needs to be a convergence. So we do need to invest in the I don't know what politically correct words are now for the other, you know, the nations outside the West, so the two-thirds world or whatever. So we need to help them converge, to get them to a point where they do not feel they need to overproduce or pollute or whatever. You know, we need to help develop them in a way that, you know, their population is fed and housed and clothed and feeling confident and, you know, and feeling they've got all their needs met. So there needs to be that contraction convergence. And I don't think there is a will in the West and in the, you know, the new capitalism is emerging throughout the world. I don't think there's a will to do that. That contraction convergence thing, by the way, was stuff that, you know, I know that me and others, when when the Scottish Socialist Party was kind of a big thing back in the early 2000s, we were shouting about that back then. And we're no further forward with that contraction and convergence thing. And back then it was seen as kind of something that needed to be done as an emergency. So I am really quite cynical about it, and probably for the same reasons as David in lots of ways as well, because I've seen the G8, I've seen the Make Poverty History thing, you know, all kind of, I've also seen, you know, as well, you know, you will as well, the big marches against the war back in, you know, when, you know, the Iraq war against the invasion of Afghanistan, when millions come on the street, and where that went and how that was just like, you know, papered over and forgotten about. So yeah, I am quite cynical. Yeah. Sorry, one last thing and I'll shut up. I think another thing that makes me cynical is how the word hope has been, and you know that we were also one of, we were probably one of the first groups of people who used the slogan Build Back Better, and how that's been cynically manipulated and used by the right, and how, you know, hope was taken as a you know, a symbol of the Democrats, you know, a few years ago, and kind of trashed and used and whatever. So all of these positive words used to cover actually reasonably cynical, you know, policies and whatever. So yeah, I guess I'm in a way a bit like David. I'm cynical about it, but still there's a little spark of like, these people are people, they're humans like the rest of us, who don't want to see their children, you know, having to cope with a terrible, terrible legacy of what we are giving them, really. So I see there is humanity there. There are people there involved in this who hopefully can pull something together that does ensure that the world doesn't go completely to shite in the next 20, 30 years. Anyway, so.
In terms of success and failure, I think the likes of Boris Johnson will be, you know, consider this a success if he manages to stop Nicola Sturgeon getting a picture with Joe Biden. And I think that's the terms that most of them are thinking in. As much as they talk about climate change and the need to act, you know, they're still thinking in these kind of very petty, small political manoeuvres. And, you know, I don't really think that's going to change anytime soon.
See, that's where my cynicism lies as well, the fact that the UK is what is being represented here, not Scotland, even though we're hosting it. And that's frustrating, and that's where I'm like, well, the UK right now is discharging what sewage and affluent into.
We'll get to that.
I'm going to hurry up. So I can moan about it.
Let's talk shite. Let's talk shite.
Let's just go straight to that then. This scandal, which I've heard amazingly dubbed, people calling the Tories the Turd Reich. So the government is giving.
Still Britannia.
That was another good one. Yeah, so the government's given polluters, that's the UK government, the green light to pump raw sewage into English rivers and seas. Only 22 Tory MPs rebelled against the government by refusing to back an amendment that would stop it. It comes 2 months after the UK's departure from the European Union and COVID-19 also causing disruptions to the supply chain for key chemicals that's used in the water by the water companies to treat the discharge. Last night, there was a big defensive social media campaign launched, a lot of Tory MPs tweeting very, very similar content in response to quite a successful social media campaign involving constituents posting photographs of their MPs online and asking them why they voted against the amendment. I think this is a possibility of actually doing a lot of damage to the government, more so than I think they anticipated. Neil?
Yeah, I mean, it comes at a time when, you know, lots of us have been feeling guilty about not swimming in the sea, like all of, you know, the lots of middle-class people are doing at the minute. So in some way, it kind of, you know, I'm like, I kind of think, you know, rub it up, you middle-class people who go out in their rubber suits and tell us how we all should be getting into that cold water and wild swimming and all those, you know, trendy words, whatever, that have been used over the past while. In some ways, it does that, because think about that. Think about, you know, the liberal middle class and Tory, you know, Tories who have spent loads of money during lockdown buying their outdoor pursuit stuff And they now have got, they've got, I mean, the Tories in particular will have, it'll be like, remember back in Thatcher's time, I can't remember the name of the minister, but he pretend, or it was during John Major's time actually, when mad cow disease was the thing.
John Gummer, I think.
Yes, and he had a burger. So it'll be the same. So Douglas Ross has to get out there in his swimming togs into the sea and pretend that he's not got cholera when he comes out of it.
Oh, the Scottish Tories. Yeah,
a swimming.
Why are they voting on it anyway? I thought English votes for English laws, but that's aside the point. I am very furious about this because some of the excuses they were coming up with, did you see them? They were saying that, we had to vote for this discharge because there's storm surges and we're going to have more storms. There's a video of drone footage. There's been no storms and there's sewage pumping into the ocean for 49 hours at Langstone Harbour in Hampshire. And I tweeted it and it is, it is vomit inducing. It's a 7 meter diameter pipe. It is literally spewing shit into the sea and ocean. And effluent, I can't pronounce. What's the correct pronunciation?
Effluent.
Yes. That is also spewing into the ocean. And we're not talking about miles and miles out to sea. We're, like, the guy was stunning on the shore. We're drawn. It's giving me the bulk. And this is all around the coastline of England and also inland in their waterways, like the rivers. You know that, them doing all that paddle boarding, as you were saying, you see that regularly on the TikTok. How can the UK be leading or representing us in COP26 when we are so divergent from that? We wouldn't dream of putting, you know, sewage directly out. I'm scared because what if we end up doing, what if we end up having to do that because of stupid decisions that were made by the UK and Brexit, we can't get the chemicals like that other thing. What is the chemicals needed, by the way? Do you know? You're a teacher. Tell us, Neil.
I don't know the specific chemicals, but they must be difficult to obtain, I presume, if they can't get them any other way, apart from through the EU.
Is it like the blue stuff that's in Portaloos, like that type of chemical?
Could be.
I have absolutely no. In fact, do you know what? What surprises me, I don't know whether you noticed, on the Ungagged, @_Ungagged Twitter account, I had an exchange with a guy who was pretending to be left wing, which is what lots of them do nowadays. And he, he asked, this is, I don't know, have you seen this thing that they do? The right winger have started doing, they ask three questions that have got actually complex answers. They don't want to know the complex answers because a lot of their questions actually raise, you know, other questions. So they don't want that. So they just come back with, you know, oh, you can't answer three simple questions, all this sort of thing. Anyway, so I got into this stupid exchange with this guy. And, you know, he kind of insists that this has been common practice for years. Now, so I don't know. I don't know enough about this, but I have always thought that, yes, this used to be common practice. This used to be something that we did maybe back in, you know, the 60s or 50s, 40s, 50s, 60s, even in the 70s when I was swimming in the sea, there was probably a turd, you know, hit me in the ear or something. But I thought progress meant that we were, I actually, you know, for some reason, again, this kind of the side of me that kind of looks at people and think you're human like me and you want the clean world. I thought that, you know, that this was something of the past. I didn't think this happened, but I have been thinking about it. And, you know, Deborah, you've been saying that, you know, we don't do this in Scotland. I am not so sure because
it happens because it happened down at the Islander. I know that because my dog went in the river. So
when did the Islander, really?
Yeah, down at the industrial estate. So I know that, you know, discharges are happen, but that example I gave of 49 hours straight of full discharge, and the excuses that MPs were using that it's only going to be in an emergency to be used as, you know, when there's overflow from a storm surge. Well, clearly that's not true. So what is the truth? what I'm asking. Yeah. That's why I was asking about is the chemicals? Can you produce the chemicals yourself?
Having said that about storm surges, you've got to remember that through global warming, back to the global warming thing, we had a brilliant summer this year. London had a shite summer. So they all did have a very rainy summer. So maybe they got weather that they haven't been used to, rub it up them. And, you know, maybe that's the reason why. And maybe because we're a wet, you know, Scotland is a wetter place. It is a place that is used more, you know, water. Maybe we are just, maybe, you know, happen to be lucky that we are set up not to have to do that so often. Maybe they have to get to the point where they are as clean as us.
That's a good point you made there. Sorry, just quickly to interject there, that London's one of the driest cities in the world. Like, they have a real shortage of fresh drinking water, as does England overall. They rely predominantly on Scottish, Welsh, Northern Irish water.
I was just going to say, like, I think part of the reason why this could be quite a dangerous political issue for the government is a bit like people used to talk about, I've heard people talk in the past about Thatcher, that she was very clever at sort of isolating and attacking individual enemies and really starting to unravel when the poll tax happened, because they kind of took on too broad an enemy at the one time because it affected a lot of people. This is a wee bit the same. I think that no matter what your class or your background or your political outlook, nobody really wants to have tons of shite pumped into the local river or the local beach. So it kind of cuts across a lot of sort of boundaries. And I think the government are realising that, and I think they're panicking a wee bit. It'll be interesting to see if this has legs in terms of a kind of social media campaign, because it seemed to spring up quite spontaneously as well. You know, sometimes you see big kind of Twitter storms and you can see people really putting the effort into organising it. This seemed very organic, like from people that didn't appear to be regularly sort of involved in sort of political Twitter.
Yeah, I think that's where the environment is something that, you know, unlike, now, David, you'll remember when we were involved in, I think you were, you would have been involved in the G8 thing, wouldn't you? Yeah. So when we, you know, when we were pushing for, you know, our sort of slogan at the time, wasn't make poverty history, we make capitalism history and all that sort of stuff. So where that kind of, you know, that didn't really work was because, you know, what, no matter what ideology you are, you have, you know, you've got a solution to making poverty history. So capitalism has, you know, its, you know, capitalists and Tories and whatever have their way to build back better, to make things better. So, you know, whether we agree with it or not, you know, they feel that they have solutions. But where this environmental thing is, pumping shit in the sea, there's only one solution to that. Don't pump shit in the sea. You know what I mean? There's only one solution to not dirtying the air that we breathe. Don't dirty the air that we breathe. Do you know what I mean? So it is, I think that, I mean, the environment is, it's like, especially we've now had in this country 11, coming on 12 years of Tory rule, and we're at the point where they're having to pump shit in the sea. So I think the environment is one of those poll tax moments. I really do. And I think this COP26, the Tories know that this COP26 is something that could expose them for what they are. So we're talking earlier on about cynicism about COP26. Yeah, I do share cynicism with COP26, but I do feel that the environment is a way not to attack the Tories, but to reveal who they are.
Hi, I'm Taylor. I am a lecturer from Glasgow and a PhD researcher. Looking to Scottish independence, I wholeheartedly, fully believe that as a country, we have got more than enough power and strength to be independent. To me, Scotland already makes decisions for the good of our people that the UK doesn't make and wouldn't make. This proves that as a country, we are a population that care. You know, we care about the success of everybody as a whole. We value difference. We value diversity. We value people's futures, Scottish people's futures. And these are the kind of things that I believe, set us apart from the UK, a cultural belief system that is separate to Scotland. And this provides us, I believe, with the ability to make a better future for ourselves. To do this, though, we do need to be independent. We need to have the power to be able to make those changes. And for so long, the votes of the Scottish people have meant very little with regards to the rest of the UK. And yes, we may be a small country, but that doesn't mean that our votes and our voice should not be heard, particularly with decisions that really impact us. We're small, we've already got world-leading ideas, and through being independent, we'll be able to make more changes for the better. We've got the resources, we've got the strength, and we want to make a better future for the Scottish people. We continue to prove that with the votes that we do cast, and this could only be strengthened with an independent Scotland. In the short term, yes, there may be teething problems, of course, but I fully believe that if we were to vote for independence now, that future generations, you know, I mean, our own futures would obviously be determined by us, but future generations would also be able to look back and say, right, that's the point where my power was strengthened over my future.
So that was yet more reasons for independence. Okay, our next subject here is about oil and gas giant BP. Open Democracy published a report this week that revealed that they spent years spying on climate campaigners and, in fact, and also hired a private intelligence firm set up by a former MI6 agent. It revealed a shocking web of surveillance. It saw them keep tabs on campaigners and share information with institutions such as the British Museum and the University of Warwick. One of the targets was Chris Garrant, a classical music composer who works with the Art Not Oil group. He campaigned against BP's long sponsorship of the British Museum. Over several years, BP gathered personal details about Gerrard, including CCTV images of him waiting at a train station when he was going to BP's annual general meeting. None of the intelligence gathered about him suggested he was engaged in certainly nothing illegal, but not even anything disruptive or a physical protest of that nature. It also revealed that Warwick University collaborated with BP on a security strategy about a student who was researching the BP archive, which is housed in Warwick's campus. Internal emails show that a security team was deployed to watch him in person and on CCTV, as well as monitoring social media activity. He was a climate activist with a group called Fossil Free Warwick, which successfully pressured the university to divest from fossil fuels. What really struck me about this is these were not like radical people. You know, they were very, very mainstream, probably quite liberal environmentalists, and yet such a sort of web of surveillance was deployed to keep an eye on them. You wonder what levels they're going to in other people that they do sort of pose as being more of a threat in terms of, you know, at the extreme end, like sort of, and why anybody that's deemed sort of to be connected to environmental terrorism, what levels are they willing to go to keep an eye on they guys?
I just think, how much money have they got to waste? They're hiring folk to keep an eye on pretty, as you say, mundane activists. Like, they probably go out litter picking and stuff. Like, I don't understand why the small man, us working class people, or middle class liberals, whatever, why they're seen as such a threat to such a global multinational corporation. I just think, how much money have they got to waste?
I kind of disagree, because it's back to what I was saying earlier on. The environment is something that could sink the Tories, and it is a cause that, you know, radicals and liberals unite on. So I don't know if you've ever heard of there's a guy called George Lakey. Have you ever heard of George Lakey? George Lakey, he's an activist in America, anybody that doesn't know who he is, but he's been in Glasgow a few times, and I went along to one of his talks, and he talked about finding ground where we can come together in order to change the world, and the environment is one of those things. So that And actually, the middle class liberal is the person who can talk to the same people as the, you know, in fact, there's middle class liberals in the Tory party. So they're crossing boundaries, and they are dangerous to the Tory party then. Whereas the extreme radicals, you know, it's funny because when I first joined, you know, the SSP years ago, I was always wondering why are we not attacking the Tories as much as we're attacking other lefties or other or the Labour Party or whatever. And the reason for that is that we are so, the Tories and the radicals like us are so diametrically opposed with no common ground. So all we can do is either shout at each other or listen to each other, right? This was only two ways of that. Whereas the middle class liberals who are being spied on, they can talk the same language as a middle class liberal to vote Tory. So they are dangerous at the moment. They are the dangerous people.
Yeah, so something else this did shock me. It was the way that, you know, you wouldn't think of what Warwick University or the British Museum as being sort of, well, I don't really think I've ever had much of a thought about them. They're fairly bland public institutions, but it certainly seems that they've been captured by BP and are working in BP's interests. Certainly the thing with Warwick University, they went to BP to warn BP about this activist. It wasn't it that BP sort of pressured them into going along with this.
They were grasses.
Yeah, and there was a lot, and they completely did. All the organisation denied this until a lot of internal emails came out in Freedom of Information requests. This just shows they were lying through their teeth as well about their denials were just complete nonsense. You know.
By the way, I asked how much money they were wasting. By the way, to get that wee bit of disagreement amongst us, because I know we all agree it's ridiculous and it's very familiar, isn't it? Remember the police had embedded with activists before?
The spy cops.
Spy cops.
I don't know if this is scares me more or less, the fact that this is not the state that's actually spying on people.
Yeah, that's a bit...
is a private organisation like that deploying sort of security agents, like, are they less constrained than state agents would be? I don't know.
It doesn't surprise me that the university went to BP because, like, thinking back to the 1980s, Thatcher launched, you know, one of her big attack points was on education and was on the universities. And I mean, I went to Stirling University, and you know, Stirling University is a prime example of what she tried to do. So critical thinking, you know, degrees and whatever were attacked. The big one that Thatcher went, or the press went for, was at the time, you know, media studies and all that sort of stuff. Like, that became a kind of a thing, like the British Rail, you know, soggy sandwich. It was like a mean kind of thing that the press went for. But
yeah, so, they turned media studies into a sort of a punchline. It was like portrayed it as like a joke degree.
Yeah, so that what that did was then it weakened universities, and they were able to then say, well, look, these universities aren't working. It's what they do. These universities aren't working. Need the private sector in here more. And now universities are totally reliant on private sector money. So it doesn't surprise me that, you know, Warwick University, you know, shopped this guy to BP at all, not in the slightest.
What was it he was doing? Was he, like, he was just posting on social media and stuff, wasn't he? Because that's what they were monitoring.
Yeah, it came to their attention, though, because I think BP's got an archive on Warwick campus, so he was researching into BP, and it was part of a campaign to get the university divest from fossil fuels and to, I think, get them off campus and stop them being so involved with the university.
Were they, like, fan? I understand why, obviously, BP didn't like it, but you're talking about BP sponsoring exhibitions at the British Museum. Let's not forget the British Museum or the stuff that they exhibit and, you know, stolen.
Stolen. Okay. Our final topic today is about the controversy that was whipped up around some comments by Green co-leader Lorna Slater. Tory MSP called them reckless remarks. The Scottish Daily Mail seemed to blame Lorna Slater for the death of every celebrity from John Belushi to Whitney Houston. And the quote was, "Many celebrities and rich people use drugs. Some well-known politicians have used drugs. So using drugs is not inherently dangerous. Using drugs becomes dangerous when the drugs are illegal and because you can't get them safely. Of course, that was trimmed down into just drugs are not inherently dangerous. And, you know, the Scottish Tories really went to town on this. And the tabloid press, of course, were happy to join in. So what did you think of Lorna Slater's remarks, Neil?
Well, I mean, obviously, I totally agree with what Lorna Slater said. And, you know, it is weird that what you said is still being attacked in the way that, I mean, again, going back to our days in the Scottish Socialist Party, David, the line that Lorna Slater was taking was a line that, you know, Scottish Socialist Party had been taken from its, you know, set up in 1999, that the danger, it really isn't the drugs, it's, you know, miseducation on drugs, and it's the war on drugs in the way that, you know, the war on drugs was a really pretend, it was a pretend way to deal with, you know, drug problems and whatever at the time. You know, there's no surprise really. Well, sorry, the surprise for me is that it's still the same line from the right wing, that, you know, it's we can't do anything about educating people, we shouldn't be doing anything about educating people about drugs, and we should be still, you know, taking this line where we fight drug takers and fight,
just,
you know.
Just say no.
Work class.
Just say no.
Exactly.
I've really not moved beyond that.
No.
It's
a wee bit more
this.
Sophisticated, but I mean, their stance is a wee bit more sophisticated in that it's, again, it's about things like, well, let's do things at a micro level, but let's not have the, for example, you know, the what are they called? I think they call them the shooting galleries and things. Let's not have them in
consumption rooms.
Yeah, consumption rooms. So let's not have them sort of next door to me, but yeah, let's do them. Do you know what I mean? So,
I was just going to say, I don't think what Lorna said was controversial at all. And really all that she was saying was that this is a classist issue, which it very is. And we spoke about it briefly in a pod when we were discussing decriminalisation. And what she's saying is there's people who are celebrities, famous people, politicians, you know, that use drugs in there, don't get arrested for it. They don't, you know, necessarily get a bad batch of drugs or whatever, however it is, whether they're doing, whether they're injecting it, snorting it, smoking it, I don't know. But the safe consumption rooms, I've seen Peter Cryant, is that his name?
Yep.
He was applauding what Lorna was saying. And I agree, I think it's true. Like if, and as you said, they just took a snippet of it, drugs aren't inherently dangerous. Well, alcohol is a drug and that's consumed under, you know, an alcohol license. So I'm always surprised that capitalists don't jump on drugs, because look at the revenue that's been made from all the cities around the world that have, you know, legalised it and made it into a commercial enterprise.
Well, there's a thing, Deborah. In America, that is happening now. So in America, state by state, slowly but surely, some drugs are, you know, now openly for sale and legally openly for sale, you know, in shops and online and all that sort of thing. And other drugs, you know, the war against, you know, the other drugs is lessened and whatever over in America. So, and Boris will be wanting to, you know, should actually, you know, can I just say, well, a wee thing that I've been very good at online, but not here, is that let's not call him Boris, let's call him by his name. His name's Alexander, that's what everybody calls him. He only uses Boris as a character. So, you know, our Prime Minister number 55, Al, he's wanting to create these trade deals. So there's a trade deal that is definitely going to happen, or, because most of the states in the US are legalizing it. Yeah, so that'll be an interesting thing over the next few while as we see Boris walking about with split advertising.
I think it undermined the Tories sort of a bit in our campaign here to try and say that this was a dangerous or shocking thing to say. When the new chief moderator of the Church of Scotland came out and said that they support decriminalisation of drug possession. So, I mean, it just shows you how much the Tories have been left behind on this issue that, you know, I don't think the chief moderator is usually known as being a radical in society. So if even that's their position now, you know, how extreme are the Tories now that they now think that the Church of Scotland are dangerous radicals?
I know, the Kirk.
The Tory party has a big problem in that is a huge problem is the age of its activists and the age of, you know, the people who are voting for it at the minute. So it has to play that game. It has to play the game of seemingly being, you know, that sort of authoritarian
moralistic
thing on, what's that?
Moralistic.
Yeah, it has to, it still has to kind of do that. But at the same time, you know, Cameron inhaled, you know, Boris definitely inhaled, if not snorted. And, you know, I really wouldn't doubt that. So they're having to play that game at the minute. But I think that game it'll become less of a game as these new trade deals start to have to happen. I think that they're going to have to sell drugs to the, you know, their pensioners that, you know, go to sleep at their conference and stuff. Give them a few uppers.
Back opium.
Yeah, this will keep you awake when, you know, I don't know, Rees Mogg is making his speech. So I think they're having a difficult game to play at the moment because of just the who's attracted to the Tories.
Yeah, and if you look at the total hypocrisy, like, you know, the likes of Michael Gove, who admitted taking cocaine, and some of the pictures that pop up around and again, I presume he is certainly still doing it. At the same time, this is a guy when he was education secretary wanted to be automatically sack any teacher that failed a drug test and things like that. And it's just it's the most rank hypocrisy in do as I say, not as I do.
I thought you were going to mention Theresa May's husband there and how he owns one of the biggest cannabis farms that produces compounds for the medicine Sativex. And also all the investors in the private clinics that are popping up. There's one in Stirling. You can go and get cannabis there. We spoke about that in the pod previously as well. But I was just joking about the bring back opium. But I think it's quite pertinent in what we're talking about in this decriminalisation. Like, criminalisation of a lot of these medicines, because that's what they initially were, is quite a recent thing. Like, you can still find, you know, references to, like, cocaine cough drops, or what's the other thing they used to do? Put morphine in children's, like, Calpol and shit. Like, that you can go and Google and look at old pictures of it. I think the fact that the Kirk is being more progressive than the Tories is definitely saying something on this issue.
Yeah, and, you know, kind of international drug policy is set by the United States. And like you mentioned, you know, how long are they going to be able to keep that pressure up? Because they bully on other countries to try to hold this line, while at the same time, individual states in their own backyard are overturning and going against what they're dictating to other countries. And there has to be a reckoning at some point in that, because you've got businesses set up in states that are legal businesses by the state laws, but they can't get like bank accounts and things like that because the federal government are treating them like they're running a cartel. It's not a sustainable situation. We can't keep this nonsense up. The war on drugs has to end.
Yeah, absolutely. Just it's interesting, Deborah, you're saying that one of the first sort of places is in Stirling. That was one of my first places as well, was in Stirling. And there was loads of places I used to go to where you had that kind of clinic, maybe unofficially.
I did read a thing years ago that said that Scotland was self-sufficient in cannabis.
Oh, wow.
They grow enough cannabis. Even with this climate, we're apparently able to grow enough cannabis without having to import. I mean, that should appeal to the Brexiteers, surely.
very good.
Also need to mention about the some of the tweets were just like stomach churning about Lana Slater, and like it was difficult to decide if they were really, really stupid or if they were deliberately missing the point, you know. And it was the same sort of thing. It kept coming up saying, talking about how many people have died, and Scotland's got a record drug epidemic. How can you say drugs aren't inherently dangerous? It was like, that was the point she's making. Making the point that this is being exacerbated by our ridiculous laws and our ridiculous approach, and that's why we have to change it. Yet people, either through political reasons or, you know, stupidity, were completely missing the point.
It was a lot of peril clutching What do you think of the children?
Yeah. Anyway, look, I'm going to have to fly, people. So this was really good. Really enjoyed this.
That's us finishing up anyway. So
all right.
Thanks for joining us, Neil.
Thank you, Neil. We'll chat about you when you're gone.
Yep. See you later. Bye.
Bye, Neil. No word yet on whether we're not entirely sure if Brian will be back next week. So we might have Neil again. We might have Brian back. Who knows? We might have another new face altogether.
Como mi español esta tarde. Just do it in Spanish and trick him. I think he's still in Spain.
Right, you try that, okay?
That's all I know. That and to say, Elara condiciana do est roto, pueden reparo ahora, por favor.
What does that mean?
The air conditioning's broken. Can you fix it the now, please? But I don't think the now is a proper translation.
Is that like just one of the phrases that you remember from your phrase book?
No, I had to get a Spanish guy to fix the air conditioning when I was on holiday, and that's how I learned it.
I thought it was like
stuck in my brain.
It reminds me of the Eddie Izzard joke when he was talking about when he was learning French, or the random phrases he would know. But he would just walk about and he'd have to carry a cat with him so he could put it on the table and go, Le chat est sur la table. The cat is on the table. The monkey is in the garden.
I just have to have a broken air conditioning unit.
And then you're sorted.
That was quite nice, having Neil here.
Nice change of pace, having a new voice. Tell us what you think, listeners, if you would like to see Neil back, or if you'd like to see him barred for all eternity.
Stickers.
Thank you. Yeah, if you're interested, we have some COP26 stickers. Might be a bit hypocritical, given how much I've said I'm hating the whole COP thing, but there's stickers if you like them. Get in touch with us on Twitter or through our email address. You can also go to their website, leftungag.org. There's some new articles there from Val Waldron and Mary Hunter. Val's article is also available in podcast form if you'd like to check that out. There's a new monthly podcast that's on its way from the other side of the Atlantic. It's called World's Beat with George Collins. You'll be interviewing scholars, activists and writers about the state of the world. Keep an eye out for that. And if there's anything you'd like us to talk about on Hollywood Ungagged, again, you can get us at _ungagged on Twitter, #HollywoodUngagged, or drop us an email at ungaggedleft@gmail.com. Put Hollywood Ungagged in the subject line. And also, if you're whatever podcast platform you're listening to this on, whether it's Apple Podcasts, Spotify, can you please give us 5 stars and a positive review so we can move up and we can share our wisdom with even more people. Deborah, have I missed anything? Have I covered it all?
I think we've covered everything. You've done very well there. You remember the whole script. Yes. Thank you, everybody, for listening.
Yeah. Thanks, everyone. Bye-bye.
Bye.